It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. 1 month after a fatal school shooting at Abundant Life Christian School in Madison, Governor Tony Evers created the statewide Office of Violence Prevention.
At least eight other states have similar offices with a mission to reduce violence on a statewide level. And in just a bit, we'll go outside Wisconsin to learn what programs make these offices more effective.
Here in Wisconsin, after a recent $10 million infusion of funds, we're taking a look at what this money is doing to help communities deal with gun violence on a local level.
Amanda Powers is director of the Wisconsin Office of Violence Prevention. Amanda, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you, and thank you again for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation and talk about our work today.
This office is using $10 million of federal funds to provide grants to local groups like nonprofits and local governments. Is partnering with places at the local level effective for grant money?
Absolutely. So prior to joining the Office of Violence Prevention, I worked with many local organizations, whether it was nonprofit, local government, statewide entities, when I was the administrator of the Victims of Crime Act grant funds at the Wisconsin Department of Justice. And I'll be honest, it is so effective to be able to work with communities because these programs know their communities best. They know the unique challenges that face their communities, whether they're in an urban setting and seeking to, you know, meet the needs of their populations that they serve in Milwaukee, or if they're serving, you know, the Northwoods. They know what unique challenges face their clients that they're serving day to day and what their community needs are and how they can best connect with those resources that their community has. And I found that, you know, especially when thinking about this grant opportunity, is we made the application fairly broad because we want folks to be able to apply for the services that they need to prevent violence and gun violence in their communities.
Violence, as you mentioned, you know, acts of violence, that's a really broad issue. It could be gun violence, it could be domestic violence, it could be suicide. They're all tragedies that impact people in Wisconsin, and the grants are available to organizations focusing on all these different types of violence. Why address violence broadly rather than taking a more targeted approach?
I think given the limited time frame that we have, and this is a one-time funding, as you mentioned, set up through federal funding from the American Rescue Plan Act. And so we have until December 31st of 2026 to expend these funds. And we wanted to make it as broad as possible so that we could reach as many Wisconsinites as possible and as many programs serving and providing anti-violence and violence prevention efforts across the state. Looking long-term, also hoping that this generates a lot of interest around the need for violence prevention funds in the state of Wisconsin, and also hopefully gives us, you know, good measures of what has been effective for our state and how we can uniquely meet the needs of Wisconsinites when we are talking about violence prevention.
Can you take us to a community or give us an example of what these grant funds will be used on in communities around the state?
Sure. There's a broad range again. So we have different program categories for the application: suicide prevention and firearm storage. So for that particular one, again, you could be looking at working within a community to provide training on suicide prevention and safe firearm storage. And you could also be working with gun owners to make sure that they have safe and secure firearm storage. We know that there is a broad range of folks, unfortunately, that use firearms to commit suicide. And so we want to start making inroads to various communities, whether or not, you know, whatever side of the spectrum that they're on when it comes to gun ownership, to make sure that folks are utilizing these resources to make sure that, you know, they won't be using or their loved ones won't be using firearms to commit suicide. I think further, when we look at the other categories that we have for services, we've got evidence-based violence intervention and outreach programs. You know, we have programs across the state that are looking to work with folks that are already experiencing violence and also looking to have credible messengers in their communities to try to prevent either youth or folks throughout, you know, all ages of life becoming involved with violence, whether it's gun violence or other types of violence. And then further, we have a category for criminal justice-based initiatives. Again, looking to how can we support folks at the local government level to enact initiatives that might further some violence prevention in their community, again, whether it's in a urban setting or, you know, across several counties that are working together to, you know, use crime gun intelligence tools or community-based policing. There's a lot of different options. And I think that's one of the key things about having so many broader program areas. And then I just want to quickly speak about the remaining two program categories that we have, which is domestic violence prevention. And again, we see the need and the intersections between domestic violence and the use of firearms, but also broadly how we can work with the communities that are already providing domestic violence intervention services to work towards preventing domestic violence.
So $10 million expended by December of 2026. Does your office have other resources to draw on? Can this make a dent in reducing violence around the state?
I believe it can make a dent. And to the point about further resources, at this time, we are solely funded through the American Rescue Plan Act. And so looking to the future, we'll need other allocations or other funds to further this work, and really hoping that, you know, there can be further action on that to move forward with continuing to fund these valuable and needed services in Wisconsin.
Amanda, you mentioned their school violence, and in December, 1 year after the Abundant Life school shooting, we spoke with Nick Matuszewski, the Associate Executive Director of Wisconsin Anti-Violence Effort, and he told us his office supports funding mental health programs, but that the vast majority of gun violence is not tied to mental health. Let's listen.
So it's often used as a distraction to say, well, let's just worry about mental health and not the guns. I think we have to approach both with equal intensity. Of course, we want to solve the mental health crises, but we have to ensure that firearms are less accessible.
What do you make of his argument to first reduce the number of guns that are available to people?
I mean, I think listening to experts in this field is critical to making sure that we can prevent violence in Wisconsin. And I think in conjunction with that, you know, part of the initiatives is fostering community among school-aged children and giving them opportunities for credible messengers that can talk about, you know, how they've either, you know, were previously involved in violence and gun violence and how that affected their lives and how they've change that trajectory for their life. And what we've seen from programs that are doing this work is building that community among school-aged children or youth and making sure that there are peer-to-peer models that they can have that support within their community from folks that, you know, look like them, have the same experience as them, or similar experiences in their school is critical to making sure that we can continue to decrease violence and gun violence in Wisconsin in conjunction with other efforts as well.
I want to turn to your office here to look at how you will measure success. And there was that study last year on offices of violence prevention across the nation, and indicating successful offices have ways to get regular feedback. Does feedback have a role in your statewide office?
I'm hoping it does. We are at the onset of my tenure. I've been in this position since October 6th, so I'm fairly new. And, you know, the primary focus of the last few months is getting the grant program ready. But I think, you know, after that and in conjunction with that is measuring the effectiveness of those funding streams and funding sources. And I've always valued feedback. I think, you know, as a grant manager, you have to understand, to my point earlier, about what the community needs are. And one of the ways of getting that is through feedback and understanding, you know, what did and didn't work and how we can make changes to make sure that, you know, the funding serves its purpose, which is violence prevention. So yes, incorporating feedback will be part of that as well.
Amanda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
Amanda Powers is director of the Wisconsin Office of Violence Prevention. Now for a look outside of Wisconsin, we turn to the Giffords Law Center. That's a gun violence prevention group that advocates for stricter laws to save lives. Each year, the center holds a meeting for state leaders who develop and carry out policies that are meant to reduce community gun violence. The center also works with representatives from state-based offices of violence prevention. Mike McLively is a senior staff attorney at Giffords Law Center and the policy director of the organization's Center for Violence Intervention. Mike, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your organization studies violence so closely on a national scale. What might be a best practice you see from these statewide offices of violence prevention? What is catching your attention?
Yeah, it's an exciting trend that we're seeing is a few years ago, there were no statewide offices of violence prevention, and now there's more than a dozen across the country. So we've brought them together on a national platform for them to share out about what they're doing, the challenges they're facing. And so we meet monthly with that group and have been able to have a great chance to see what's working and not working around the country. And I think where we're seeing success is you have offices, like you mentioned in the conversation just now, that are looking at gun violence and violence in general as a very multifaceted issue. You know, it's not just suicide, it's not just mass shootings. And it's not just criminal justice or gun policy. It's housing policy, it's economics, it's education. And so I think these offices are really important in bringing together different parts of the government to fund the work and make sure that at the local level, we're doing all the things we need to do to keep bringing gun violence down, which we're having success in nationwide, but we need to keep our foot on the gas.
So when there are so many overlapping issues that influence violence on a local level, what are the challenges to helping to make a dent in this particular issue?
Yeah, I think it can be overwhelming, but what helps is starting with just gathering the data and understanding what's driving the problem. And just quick example, in a lot of states, and I'm based in California, but Wisconsin has similar dynamics. We have a lot of community violence, interpersonal violence in our denser urban areas, but then in rural areas, suicide is much more prevalent. So these offices, where they're effective, have been helping localities gather data, understand, okay, are you facing a suicide problem? Are you facing a homicide problem? And those have very, very different solutions. And it's really important to understand what are the dynamics and are we addressing each of those components appropriately?
Mike, how do these offices ensure they have enough funding for the long haul and to ensure that they are making a positive impact for years or decades?
Yeah, it's really tricky. I mean, one of the main sources so far has been state governments that have really stepped up. Under the Biden administration, before this current administration, there was actually a White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention that was created for the first time in history, and that's since been disbanded. Under the Trump administration, we've seen lots of different funding streams for violence prevention cut, unfortunately. So that's the bad news. The good news is that states have stepped up to try to fill that gap. And it's really on these agencies to be creative about how they're leveraging what is available currently in the federal environment. And then, like I said, trying to access these other forms of funding. So Amanda was mentioning the Victims of Crime Act, and that's an important source of potential support in this area. So it's really about just looking at what's out there. And if a state doesn't have an Office of Gun Violence Prevention, that's just not happening at all.
So in Wisconsin, we now have a statewide office of violence prevention, as you know, but we also have these local offices at the city level, at the county level. How do you see other states with multiple offices interacting with these different programs and the different initiatives? Is that an effective structure?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the areas of improvement for the whole country. But I think Illinois actually offers a really effective model where in the last few years, they've built out a very robust partnership between the state level Office of Gun Violence Prevention and other offices that work on violence. And then the Cook County, where Chicago is located, and Chicago. So the city, the county, and state government have all come together to coordinate on their violence prevention grant making. They're coordinating on data collection. They're coordinating on evaluation of the programs. And you really don't see that in many parts of the country. So we're hoping that we can start spreading that around and that that becomes the best practice. And we see that in every single state because you need that kind of coordination to move the needle on this.
So there seems to be more of a centralized mission and much more communication with these different outlets and different agencies.
Exactly. And otherwise, you've got everyone doing their own small piece, and it's important. But if they're not working together, they're just not nearly as effective.
We just passed the one-year anniversary of the Abundant Life school shooting here in Wisconsin. This attack left two people dead, six others injured, two of them critically. And we're having this conversation shortly after a school shooting at Brown University, a mass shooting at Bondi Beach in Australia. And I imagine some people feel that the level of violence across the globe is insurmountable. Is it? What keeps you going?
Yeah, I think we're all feeling that heavily, especially this past week. What keeps me going is looking at the big picture in the United States. We had a giant spike in gun violence in particular in the last few years in the wake of COVID, but we're also seeing historic reductions in a lot of cities around the country. So I could point out a dozen different cities from Baltimore to Chicago to Los Angeles that are having decades low level of homicides. And California, the data is still being finalized, but if it holds up, 2024, last year, will have been our lowest gun homicide rate on record. And so those kinds of headlines, I think, are not really breaking through, but gives me hope that we actually are making a lot of progress and just need to keep it up.
What do you see in state houses around the country? Because in Wisconsin, you know, some gun policies continue to come into the legislature and get defeated. What impact is policy making having right now in state legislatures?
Yeah, great question. I mean, one of the biggest trends we're seeing is this recognition that this is such a multifaceted issue. And obviously, mass shootings are horrific and take up, you know, that's what we read about in the headlines. But in reality, that's about 1% of overall gun violence. And what we've seen is legislatures recognizing that community violence, day-to-day violence, it's very preventable, but we haven't been investing in it. And a few years ago, there were about two or three states investing anything in community violence intervention prevention programs. This year, we measure this at Giffords. There's more than 20 states, I think it's 22 now, that are investing specifically in that work. And so we're starting to see a lot of progress, and it's really being seen as a bipartisan issue. I mean, gun violence can be so controversial, but it really doesn't have to be. And in a number of states, Texas this year, for example, just passed funding for community violence intervention programs. And I think when we move into a more dynamic conversation than just law enforcement or just gun supply, it really becomes possible to find more common ground.
Where should organizations look to find solid data in their communities on gun violence? Because this data can, you know, federal data can have holes in it, can be lacking.
Yeah, I mean, where we are in terms of data collection in this country is decades behind where we need to be, considering how important this issue is. So that's something we work on every day. And we've made some strides and also some steps backwards at the federal level with this current administration, and it's hard to get accurate data. So we have to supplant that and supplement that with state efforts. And a number of states have created really robust data collection systems and have these dashboards available that show exactly where violence is occurring, because violence is very, community violence especially, is very concentrated in specific areas. And when you can map that out and see the trends, you can have a much more effective response. So it's really, at this point, the federal government should be leading the way. Unfortunately, right now, they are not. But we are seeing a number of cities, and I point to Chicago again, that's built out an incredibly robust data collection system and a dashboard that lets local violence prevention programs understand what they're doing, how they fit into the broader picture, and that's really helping a lot.
Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mike McLively is policy director at Giffords Law Center, which is a gun violence prevention group. And earlier, we spoke to Amanda Powers, the director of the Wisconsin Office of Violence Prevention. We've been learning about statewide efforts to prevent violence here in Wisconsin and in other cities around the country.